Hey everybody, John here. Just like last week's episode, this week's episode is rated E for explicit. We are not going to be using any dirty words just to use them, and some of the subjects we talk about are very, very uncomfortable and not suitable for any children. So if you have children and they like listening to this podcast, we're very, very sorry this week's episode is not for them. If you want to keep on listening, that's on your hands, not on ours. We are giving you this warning. But yeah, it's not comfortable topics, okay? So if you want to just go ahead and skip this week, we're not going to be mad at you at all, okay? But this episode is rated E for explicit, and you'll see why during the episode. So listen with discretion, okay? Everybody have a good one. Bye. What's up, everybody? This week, Sarah and I continue our discussion about some of the most important events in 90s feminism. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? We are back. And I hope you enjoyed last week, because we've got more of the same this week.
Woohoo!
Yes, I'm joined by Sarah. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So before we go ahead and get started, I want to go ahead and plug a couple of items. First of all, if you like what we do and you want to go check out some earlier stuff that we've done, go check out becausememynetwork.com. That's where you find an archive of every single show that we've ever done, ever. That's every podcast, every YouTube video, and every stream.
Ever.
If you want to catch up with the latest news, check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes.
Maybe Twitter, I don't know yet. This is going out. This is being recorded. This has been recorded back in December. There's a long jump in between the two episodes because we got busy. But we don't know if Twitter's going to be a thing or not by the time this is released.
Yeah, there's no clue.
And I've done that for all the episodes of The Gamer I've recorded too. So that's going to be fun, especially when that's coming out later in the month. And go ahead and check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbean, and Amazon Music. That's where you'll find this very, very podcast. The reason I say all of those is you might not be listening on your regular podcast feed. So if you are listening to Amazon Music, you can go ahead and catch us.
Yay.
So, Sarah, how you been?
I'm good. I am very, very good. How are you?
Well, I ask the questions around here.
and avoid them too.
Yeah, no, I avoid them. Everything's been going well. We've just been, like I mentioned, we've been super busy. We're getting prepared for Snowmageddon 2, which is about to hit the south.
Electric Boogaloo?
Yes. So, but it's okay. It'll be long past by the time this is released. So... Mm-hmm. Yes, like I said, Sarah had me record them all early, and I kind of did, so there you go.
Well, the intent was,
Then life happened.
Yes, as it tends to, yes. So, we had the flu, it sucked, but it wasn't the Rona, so yay. That was earlier this year, but
that
we're
was
all good
this
now.
Year. Yeah. Yes, that's why we were late delivering last year, because we had the coronavirus. Beautiful. That's,
yes.
Sarah had the flu, Girly had the flu, the boy had the flu. Mm-hmm. The other boy had the flu.
Mm-hmm.
I had the flu.
Mm-hmm.
It just flew by. Okay.
But
enough of my bad jokes. Let's get to why we're here. Sarah, we're going to continue our conversation on feminism in the 90s. Now, disclaimer from last time. Of course, this is an explicit episode because we can't describe the themes of the episode without sugarcoating it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want your young ones listening, as we said at the beginning of the episode, go ahead and check us out next week on... Yeah, we're not going to think anything bad of you.
Of course not.
No. But we are going to be talking about themes that are very, very uncomfortable to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So strap in and let's get prepared.
And, all right.
Okay, what I mean by uncomfortable, you'll see when we get to it, the uncomfortableness of things.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and also, this is not a complete list. This is not single
it's
thing.
Not a, it's not a full
I would take all 12 episodes to do everything.
Yes.
And even then
we'd be missing some. Yes.
So, let's start with back in the murky world of the Clinton administration.
Ooh, yes.
Some good feminist news in the Clinton administration was Janet Reno.
Yes, I love Janet Reno.
So, he wanted to appoint high-ranking women into his cabinet. He wanted to appoint women to his high-ranking roles in the cabinet.
Yes.
And he actually nominated Zoe Bird and Kimber Wood for the position, but both lost out because of Nannygate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was Nannygate?
Nannygate was the controversy that both Baird and Wood had hired illegal aliens to be nannies for the, you know, their own respective children. Baird's hire did not pay Social Security tax, while Wood's did, which was the main issue at hand. It's bad enough
that he hiring undocumented right. workers,
but then they're not paying taxes. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Wasn't Kimber Wood the judge on the Pepsi case that we watched the other day?
Yep.
Okay. If y'all haven't seen that, by the way, quick side note, if y'all haven't seen that, go to Netflix and say, Pepsi, Where's My Jet? It's a really, really good documentary.
Yeah, it's a good documentary.
We might actually cover that because it happened
maybe.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
But when the Clinton administration didn't seem to care or think it would be an issue, they both lost steam very, very quickly.
Right,
he turned to Janet Reno, who was a public prosecutor at the time.
Yes. Reno was originally ruled out of the role by Clinton due to her lack of experience of being in the Justice Department or federal law. But she was confirmed by a 98-0 margin, which these days is crazy.
You won't get that these days.
No, not at all. But she served as AG for the entirety of the Clinton administration.
Which is odd. Or is it not odd? Because I know certain
back
positions...
Back then, it wasn't as different as it is now.
Okay, because...
Now, people get... it's fickle.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but in 93, she was given false information by the FBI, which ended in the Waco siege with, you know, bloodshed.
Oh,
that was horrible. Oh, the Branch Davidian compound and David Koresh, that was... We may have to do an episode on that one day. But
maybe.
Yeah, I'm going to need something before we do that.
Well, because you lost your favorite TV show because of all that, right?
Yes, they just started off with Scrabble, the TV show. And okay, now, before I end up looking like a whole gigantic butt, I was like 12.
Yeah.
Okay? And my being at home, everything was, yeah. So, all my shows are preempted. So that wasn't cool, but because we didn't have cable, we was, you know, broken stuff. And when you're 12, you're like, oh man, that sucks. But what about this other?
But at 12, you don't think of things like that.
Yeah,
you don't know what the ATF is.
No, I just knew that folks was like blowing each other up, and that looked very scary. And my anxiety at 12 could not deal with that. Actually, I was 12. Yeah. Yeah, my anxiety couldn't deal with that. So I was like, no. So anyway, go ahead.
But I was going to say in 93, you know, she had a bad year with Waco, but she also captured and convicted Omar Abdel Rahman for the World Trade Center bombings.
Yes. And she also captured and convicted the Unabomber in a separate case, Timothy McVeigh, for the Oklahoma bombings.
So she liked the bombers.
There. Yes. Well, you know, there were a bunch of folks doing bad things, and she was on it. So, in 94, she appointed a special counsel into Whitewater, which is Robert Frisk. However, this was seen as a conflict of interest, so Ken Starr was appointed instead. Oh!
We could be here all night.
Ken Starr.
What did you like about Ken Starr, Sarah? What did you dislike about Ken Starr?
Everything. But
wasn't Ken Starr the guy who was the special prosecutor over the Clinton impeachment?
Yeah, should let Starr investigate Monica Lewinsky and Paula Jones's accusations against Clinton. Well, mainly Paula Jones and Monica got drug into everything, and
yeah.
So he was somewhere in my grandparents' books. It's so because you know my grandmother was obsessed with. Records and like she saved the newspapers from the Gulf War and all this stuff and but she's got a book on the Warren Commission report, which is, you know, from JFK, and next to it is the Ken Starr report, and I was like, really? You went from to okay. So
I always wanted to read those, but I never brought myself to it.
They're in there in the cabinet. So I figure, you know, we'll get the Mueller report and sit next to it and see. No. So, anyway, with all of that, Clinton was impeached on 11 grounds as well as Reno being in contempt of Congress, a vote that never happened.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know that she was also impeached.
No, she was impeached. Well, she was. She wasn't impeached. She was accused of being in contempt of Congress.
I see. I didn't know that. Okay. I didn't know Clinton had 11 charges.
Yeah.
I thought it was like 2 or 3.
I don't remember exactly they were all for. We're going to have to go back and do a whole thing. Yeah. And what is.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. We have got some stuff coming on Mr. Clinton later on in the season.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's a fascinating time to look at things. It is.
What a time to be alive. Yes. So, anyway, but post the Clinton administration, Janet returned to Florida, and she ran for governor, didn't quite make it. But then again, Floridians are, I mean, okay, if you're Floridian and listen to us, you're cool. I know some cool Floridians. I also know some not so cool Floridians. So there you go.
Yeah.
But just like I also know some not so cool Texans and some not so cool Louisianans, they're everywhere. But I mean, there's not like memes of Nevada man.
Well, I was telling the boy that last night. The reason why is Florida has different reporting laws than most other states do.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear about somebody wrestling alligators covered in KY jelly, if it happened in Maine, it's not going to get out until after the court case. But in Florida, they can report on it straight away.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Maine Man doesn't have the same ring to it, though, does it?
Right. Jermaine Man. Okay.
Lobster hunting.
Okay, not with you. Okay.
For all the people in Maine who are offended by that, just replace Maine with Massachusetts. It'd be
there
fine.
There you go. All right. So, however, she did become one of the founding members of the Innocent Project, which is a nonprofit organization that helped exonerate prisoners with DNA evidence.
I think that's supposed to be the Innocence Project. I think I wrote it down wrong. My apologies.
Okay.
But that's, I mean, they've got involved with a lot of high-profile cases. The cases on To Catch a Murderer, for example. They went through the Innocence Project.
Very cool.
So, you know, that's her legacy, I think. More than being the AG, that's going to be her legacy.
And she did end up passing away in 2016 due to complications with Parkinson's disease.
How she looked through history? Favorable, would you say?
Yes. Overall, yes. I mean, she, other than everything that went down with Star and Whitewater and what is, she personally had no...
Scandal.
I mean, she showed up and she did her job, and then afterwards she continued to do the jobs that she chose to do. So she was very, you know, yeah.
Okay.
So I dig that.
Cool. Okay, so going from the machinations of President Bill Clinton and his cabinet, which he wanted to call Camelot.
Oh, dear.
George Carlin gave a whole thing on that. I'm going to leave it there.
Yes.
We go to the across the pond mm-hmm. to the homeland. My homeland.
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
And we look at Cool
Britannia.
Now, British pop culture in the 90s exploded all over the world mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. Things like the common letterbox and the phone booth and the Union Jack were all symbols of...
We were down for it.
We were down for it. British music took mm-hmm. over the world. Mm-hmm. You know... British pop culture was just everywhere you looked at it.
Yes.
And one of the things that it influenced was the world of modeling.
Yes.
Now,
had George Michael adopting every supermodel he could find and putting them in all of his videos.
Yes. Well, so, that was George Michael trying to cover up, but sadly.
I think at the time he was still and not fully, but...
I mean, anyway, you know, it's a shame you couldn't talk about stuff like that even then, right. You know, but, right.
But yeah, so like Kate Moss and Naomi Campbell became overnight megastars.
Yeah. And they were hanging out with the rock stars,
Christy Turlington and Cindy Crawford and all them. And then, with rock stars, I mean, Kate Moss and Johnny Depp, which of course, if you have been under a rock, I mean, she testified for him recently. So, Whew. So,
I mean, they were hanging out in on Private Island, on Mick Jagger's Private Island with Noel Gallagher while they were mm-hmm. writing Oasis' third album, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure soft drinks and powdered sugar were not on the agenda.
No. So, but the thing that most people don't realize is that as prevalent as the UK lad culture was, it was also mirrored by women. You know, lad culture was mainly drinking, casual sex and drugs.
And football.
And hooliganism, yes. But British women also dove deep into that culture as well, starting to become more, you know, vocal on feminist issues in the UK.
That's where girl power came from.
Yes. Girl power is a catchphrase of the pop group The Spice Girls, which was teaching young girls to be themselves and be awesome.
Which is a good message.
Yes.
But it wasn't a grassroots message. It was a corporate slogan.
Yeah. I mean,
it was a catchphrase.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it was a Simon Cowell group.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it was seen as a token slogan as opposed to a genuine call to arms. And this is the criticism that the Riot Girls spoke about.
Yeah, this is what we talked about last week. It wasn't genuine, but it became genuine, if that makes sense. You know, women were starting to be taken seriously. But it also backfired immensely on Jerry Halliwell. When she went solo, she did a performance at the Brit Awards, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was either the Brit Awards or the MTV Awards in Europe, where she basically, it was around about the time that the other Spice Girls were having babies and, you know.
Yeah.
And she mocked them for all that was worth and kind of killed her credibility with the girl power movement because, you know, she was saying, look at you, you're stuck at home with kids and there's nothing wrong with being a mother, there's nothing wrong with being not a mother, you know.
Right.
And she was kind of took it the whole direction.
Yeah. Well, another cool thing that happened right around the same time was Take Our Daughters to Work Day. So that was created by Marie C. Wilson, Darren Ball, and Gloria Steinem. Love me some Gloria Steinem. It was designed to expose future job opportunities and education worth to young women all across the United States.
So, yeah, that was the first time they did that was in 93, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now it was originally a Take Your Daughters to Work Day for girls only due to the, you know, the unique self-esteem issue that young women faced in the United States at the time. I mean, you have, you know, body issues and everything like that. And it was another way as well to get equality because you had these young girls coming up and they didn't want to be stay-at-home parents. They wanted their own careers. They wanted their own lifestyle. They wanted to be in control of their own stuff. And so,
well, yeah, because you didn't just have women bringing their daughters to work. You had men bringing their daughters to work too. And so it got to be like, how are you going to bring your daughter to work and show her? I mean, are you going to leave her a couple floors down where her glass ceiling's going to stop?
Yeah.
Or are you going to help her, you know, like rise to where you're at? You know what I mean? Like, so it helped open up dialogue.
An opportunity.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But since 2003, however, the program has included young boys, which is awesome, and has become Take Your Child to Work Day. So, and true feminism is inclusive, so I'm down with that. The program, while encouraging people to bring their own children to work, also reaches out to children in residential and shelter programs.
So it's for disadvantaged children.
Right, or like the Boys and Girls Club, you know, adopt, when you do the adopt a sister, adopt a brother thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can do that too.
So it positive to, you know, positive to everyone.
Right.
But it had its humble roots with, I mean, did you take part in it?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't think where my mom worked at the time it was available, because even though it was a thing, like, not all employers
did it.
Right. Especially not at first. I remember,
I don't know, your dad was self-employed, so.
Well, no, not at that time, but I was living in Texas when it started. I remember when a girlfriend of mine, her mom worked for American Airlines at EFW, like, that first year, and they were doing it, and then she got to go with her, and I was so jealous. I was like, I want to go, like, through a ticket booth or be a stewardess for a day. Yeah, I mean, I was ridiculous. But I thought it was really cool, though.
So we're changing gears real quick, and this is what I was talking about.
We are shifting, like, we are speed racer today, but that's okay, because we got a lot of stuff to focus on.
And this is what I was saying, stuff about uncomfortable content earlier on in the episode. Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, what is that uncomfortable content?
Well, one of the things with feminism in the 90s was the being proactive about taking back derogatory terms. You know, women had been trying to take back insulting terms used exclusively on women. And we still do this to this day. So, again, this there's some wordy dirds depending on how if you get easily offended. But words like whore, bitch, cunt, and slut were considered the harshest words used. Whores and sluts were sexually promiscuous women. Bitches were assertive women. Right.
And for the record, if you were part of the Commonwealth... The Commonwealth countries, mm-hmm. everybody's cunt.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's sort of like it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but in 1992, the Canadian band Fifth Column released the song All Women Are Bitches. This was seen as the first step on reclaiming words that were derogatory. And then throughout the decade, women being described, you know, women began to describing themselves. Thank you. As bitches and sluts trying to take back the sting off the words.
And then I mean, nowadays, like, I'm a bad bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That started DNA in test. The 90s.
Yes. Well, it all sort of goes back to Meredith Brooks releasing the song Bitch, which took reclaiming the word to a whole nother level.
Yes, it is. The song Bitch I've seen performed many, many times. By an all-male 90s band.
Yes.
So.
But at the time, though, I will say, because I was 16? Yeah. And I had friends with younger cousins. It was something kind of cool watching, you know, 8, 9, and 10-year-olds sing along to Bitch. Like, they weren't allowed to say bad words. Well, a lot of it was because... If you sing along with the radio and it was like something cool because you weren't allowed to just call somebody a bitch, yeah. But if you're singing along with it, it's okay. But the message of it, I think, really, like, stuck.
Yeah. I mean, she also described herself as a child, a lover, and a mother.
Right.
In the same thing.
Right.
And, you know, it's a good song.
Yes.
But it means something completely different to me, obviously, because...
Well, yeah. Because, yeah.
You know, but since then, the words, they still have sting to them.
Yes.
But it's not a poisonous sting as much anymore, if that makes sense.
Well, it's all about intent.
Where it's more ballistic damage rather than corrosive damage.
Right. And then
they're still bad, and you shouldn't say them to women, obviously. But the point, you know, the point I was making was they sting, but not as bad anymore.
Yes. Another thing that was going on during, you know, with 90s feminism at the time was sexual liberation.
Yes.
So, this is due to women, starting to reclaim their sexual identity.
And it goes in with reclaiming the woods too.
Yes.
They go hand in hand.
Sluts and whores were women who had slept with a lot of men. There was no insulting male equivalent.
No, there wasn't, because, you know, the
man whore wasn't a thing yet.
And even if you were called a man whore, man would wear that with pride.
Right.
You know, it's the stupid joke about the shitty key and the shitty lock.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The master key and the shitty lock, excuse me.
Yeah. In fact, men were celebrated for sleeping with multiple women.
Yeah.
And the whole this irritates the crap out of me, right? Like, men at the time, and if you go back... Now, I'm not saying that we're completely healed of this, you know, stupidity in this day and age. But if you look at late 90s and early aughts, reality TV, especially ones where they follow like the date that like the dude's trying to find a wife or whatever, you know, like whatever. Like men would, and a lot of them still do this. Well, I say a lot. Some still do this. They were lamenting the fact that they couldn't find wives. If a woman didn't sleep with them the first date, they wouldn't call her back.
Yeah.
But if they did, if she did, they wouldn't respect her enough to go on a second date. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Eh?
I mean, it happens very rarely.
So, I mean, it's basically everybody's the Madonna or the whore at the time. So, women were becoming more comfortable with their sexual identities and were able to hold themselves to their own standard. Things like slut shaming are considered frowned upon in most circles. Yes.
I mean, it's starting to, you know.
Yeah.
The millennials and Gen Z is starting to not care about that kind of stuff.
Right.
And part of that is to do with, you know, standing up for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got more women who are coming out as queer and poly more in the 2020s than back in the day.
I mean, that's something completely different. Because, look, every guy thought he knew somebody who was queer and, you know, were trying to egg them on and, you mm-hmm. know, basically the two drunk girls kissing at the bar kind mm-hmm. of stereotype.
Yeah.
And that's not what we're talking genuine, you know, sexuality.
I mean, I remember, I know guys who would, back in the day, literally slut shame if they thought that a girl even so much as masturbated, much less did anything else. Like, would literally just call her the worst of worst.
But I guarantee you he had a video under his bed of that stuff.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. And a lot of that, there was purity culture tied up in there, too. But that's the word
I was looking for. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. We've moved away from purity culture for the most part.
God. So, we can do a whole other thing on that.
Because here's the thing, right? What people do in their own private business
ain't yours.
As long as they're not hurting anybody,
ain't yours.
Ain't anybody's business. There if they're go. Hurting somebody, then it becomes your business.
It becomes somebody's business.
It becomes somebody's business.
Yeah. Also, something that you had going on at the time was the U.S. versus Virginia. And this was a Supreme Court case that took a look at the notion Commonwealth.
Took the notion of the Commonwealth of Virginia's exclusion of women from the Virginia Military Institute violated equal protection clause under the 14th Amendment.
Yes. So the court struck down the admissions policy in a 7-1 landmark ruling.
Now, there's 9 justices. How did we get 7-1?
Well, Ginsburg was joined by Stevens, O'Connor, Kennedy, Souter, and Breyer in a majority. Her writing for the majority, Justice Ginsburg stated that the Virginia Military Institute had failed to show justification for their sex-based admissions policy. The proposed
VWIL,
a women's counterpart, was seen as lacking all of the training, alumni support, and facilities that the VMI had, and therefore violated the 14th Amendment. We're not doing that separate but equal crap no more.
I get what they were trying to do with the whole, hey, let's have a women's version, but I mean...
Right. Yeah, no.
Well, there's no standing and there's no reputation for it. Right. So,
Chief Justice Rehnquist offered a concurrence. He didn't believe this was a violation of the 14th Amendment, but agreed that there was not a good faith attempt to have two schools with the same stature, funding, prestige, or influence. Now, Scalia dissented, while Thomas did not participate due to recusing himself as his son was a student at VMI. Let the record show that Justice Thomas knows how to recuse himself. That is all. Scalia's dissent made RBG's opinion better due to his stinging dissent. Look, RBG, we didn't deserve her. God bless her. But you know that as much as they butted heads, I mean, just ripped each other to shreds in the court, that like behind the scenes, Scalia and Ginsburg were besties.
Yeah. Well, see, that's an example of you can respect somebody in spite of their politics.
Right.
A lot of people say, well, you can't do that nowadays. Yes, you can do that. Politics is politics. If you want, you know, to talk about funding for the local leisure center, that's politics. You want to talk about whether or not we should fund this or make this a law, that's politics. If you want to erase someone's right to exist, that's not politics. That's not bigotry.
Yeah.
I don't stand for bigotry, I can respect somebody with different politics. I can't respect someone with bigotry. Right. You know.
Well, and VMI was the last all-male public university in the United States.
I put last all-male.
I know. I know. So, then we go from that to V-Day and the Vagina Monologues. The Vagina Monologues is an episodic play which premiered in 1996. And an episodic play is a play with the same theme based across several different episodes.
Okay, so let me give you an example of that. You have a cooking show, and you have seven courses, and you show each course, but it's not the same course, but they're linked by the fact that it's cooking.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so the play was written by Eve Ensler, who wrote the first drafts after interviewing over 200 women. And so she was looking for their views on sex, relationships, and violence against women. It started as a conversation between friends, and then just kind of expanded and grew.
Yeah, like you tell two friends, I tell two friends, and they want to now talk to you, and so on and so forth. The Majonologues.
That's got to go. The Vaginologues.
The Majonologues.
Majonologues.
Majonologues. The monologues. Excuse me. The monologues deal with aspects of all of the feminine experience.
Yes.
You know, such as sex, sex work, body image, love, rape, menstruation, genital mutilation, masturbation, birth, orgasm, and the various components for the vagina are simple and physical aspect of the body.
Yes. So every year, right? Every year a new monologue is written. Some have been written about women under the Taliban in Afghanistan, while others focus on gender identity. So V-Day is a day, usually around Valentine's Day, which raises awareness to the violence against women. The organization seeks to strengthen existing anti-violence efforts by raising money and consciousness, and to lay the groundwork for new educational and protective legislative endeavors for women throughout the world.
Now, why did I lump them together? Because usually during V-Day celebrations,
right,
they would perform vagina monologues.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yes. So, V-Day's work is grounded in four core beliefs.
Well, that is, art has the power to transform thinking and inspire people to act. Lasting social and cultural change is spread by ordinary people doing extraordinary things.
Right.
Local women know best what their communities need and become unstoppable leaders.
Preach it.
And one must look at the intersection of race, class, and gender to understand violence against women.
Absolutely.
Now, both have their critics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, the Vagina Monologues is very, very pale. Very, very pale. It talks too much about sex and people, leaves out too much about sex and people of color and transgender women.
Right.
It's basically, somebody described as white middle-class women.
Right.
And while they're...
Not every performance.
No.
Statistically, yes, you are correct.
And V-Day has been accused of being there after the fact, as opposed to being on the front line.
Right.
So, like, kept in hindsight. You know, and on the one hand, that's a valid criticism, but on the other hand, they're not going to know when violence against women is going to happen.
Well, yeah, you can't just,
you can't predict it and have somebody there.
Right. That doesn't work. Right.
No.
And then, is that just about...
That's just about everything that we've got to cover. I mean, is there anything that you can think of that we've missed off the top of your head?
Between last week's episode and this episode, I mean, we've covered a lot. And I think, you know, overall, it's a pretty good overview. I mean, obviously, like we said at the beginning, there's going to be things, like, if we wanted to touch on everything, we would be here for quite a while.
Yeah.
But just, you know, touching all the bases, it's definitely a good place to start.
So, overall, what do you think was the legacy of feminism in the 90s?
I think, again, it was an interesting place to come of age as a woman. Had I been born 10 years before, my life would be completely different. I don't know, like, I grew up as a teenager reading Susan Faludi and listening a bit to Riot Girl music and wanting to go to Lilith Fair and, you know, singing along to Meredith Brooks. And so while I am still, I'm technically a zennial. I'm literally, depending on the chart you look at, I'm either the last of Gen X or the first of the millennials. So whatever. But as such, it's weird because I witnessed and even felt a lot of the same glass ceilings that like my mother's generation did and people older than me did. But my viewpoint on it is different. You know what I mean? It's very weird. But it definitely, I think, helped me raise stronger women.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my oldest, when she had her first big girl breakup, like she had flown to other parts of the country to go see this person and multiple times. And when they broke up, like, she was upset for, like, 2 days. And then she came in here. And she said, okay, I'm done. I loved him, but I know my worth. You taught me that. And I was like, yay, I didn't mess up. She's like, I'm worth more than that. So I'm good here. And if he doesn't get that, then oh, well. And I'm like, hoo-hoo, y'all. So, I obviously didn't have that. My first big breakup, I thought I was going to die. Die. So, yeah, it's a wild ride, but there's still so much to do.
Yeah, of course.
It's never ending. And then, but it's also, again, become a lot more intersectional. So, but it's good in a way. Well, in a lot of ways. Not in a way, but in every way. Because it's not just looking at women. It's looking at women in this. It's looking at, you know, black women and other women of color and how their identity is completely different. You know, yes, there's a struggle, but my struggle is different from their struggle and their struggle is different from somebody else's struggle. And so there's just a lot of stuff to do. So.
And with that, I think we're going to draw a line underneath it. I think we've taken up too much of the time of people.
Sorry. I could talk a lot.
No, you could talk a lot. That's one of the reasons I had you on.
I know.
But that's it for this episode. We'll be back here in a few minutes. Sarah will be back next week.
Yes.
And I will go ahead and wrap everything up.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Sarah. You've been awesome.
Thank you, hon. See you later.
See you. Sincere thank you to Sarah Connolly for taking the time out of her very, very busy schedule to talk to us. It is 9 o'clock on a Sunday evening, so you know how difficult that is, especially if you know you're super busy like she is, and believe me, she is. She will be back next week where we talk about Radiohead's The Bends. Yes, their second album. It's going to be a lot of fun talking about that. We're going to go ahead and talk about how it came about and why the band hit the song Creep so much. It'll be very, very interesting. And Creep's not on the album, but we'll get to that next week, okay? And also, if you like this episode or these kind of episodes, we've got a couple more coming up this season. As we alluded to, we're going to be talking about the presidency of Bill Clinton, and Sarah's joining us for that. I'm looking forward to doing those longer form episodes. A little bit stretching my wings as opposed to talking about media every now and then. And I know you guys want to hear something different than me reviewing 90s media. So there's that. Also, coming up on our YouTube channel, The 90s Gamer is returning on January 31st. That's right. We are going back to our roots and we're playing Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge. Yes, if you're not unfamiliar with Monkey Island, go ahead and check out the YouTube channel. It's got the original Monkey Island playthrough on there. And it's basically a puzzle game with a lot of humor involved. Now, I've played it through. I finished recording the season today, which is in December. And yeah, you're just going to have to watch it because it's really, really funny. So, that's it for this episode. I've got really nothing else to say. I really don't. Don't make me say anything, please. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm tired, everybody. But if you want to go ahead and support us, go ahead and check out becomesmovienetwork.com. That's where you find all of our archives of every show that we've ever done, be it audio, video, or stream. Yes. If you want to keep up with our latest news, join our Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter pages, if Twitter's still around, that is. That's where you get all of our latest news and what's happening. And, of course, if you're listening to this on a podcast network that you usually don't listen to podcasts on, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, and Amazon Music, okay? And that is it. And as you can tell, I'm losing my voice, so I better wrap this up real quickly. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Once again, have a happy new year. Hope you're having a happy new year, rather. And, yeah, take it easy, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Take it easy. Bye. Thank you.